This is an interview with Mr. Forrest Bull, conducted at Bishop, Texas, August 7, 1973. Mr. Bull moved to Bishop in 1939 and has lived in the Bishop Driscoll area since that time. Mr. Bull was employed by construction companies that built the first gas recycling plant at Bishop and the Salinas plant. Mr. Bull is now retired and is 73 years old. This interview was conducted by Darlene Wilkinson.
Okay. Well, you know, back in those days, it was a pretty rough depression in Oklahoma. And I came here hunting work because there wasn't any up there. I had some folks that was already here. My dad came down on Christmas to visit, and he got a job. They were building that what was called the Wardner plant. That was the first recycling plant that I know of anywhere. It was called recycling. So I came down. They thought maybe I could find work down here, and I came and went for the job every day for 30 days before they finally put me on. Finally, one day, one of the main boss men walked out the side there and he said, "You want to work today?" I said, "What do you think I've been around here for the last 30 days for?" So he put me to work that day and just promised me 3 or 4 days' work. But I stayed with him for several years, several plants. And I worked several months, sent money back to my family in Oklahoma. Finally took off and went and got them. I asked my boss man about taking off 2 or 3 days and go get my family. He says, "That's all right, you go get your family. Bring them down here." We've been in this vicinity most of the time since that. My family's been here all the time. I've been off on some other construction jobs, you know, plant jobs.
Would you talk a little bit about building the plant? You talked about working here. What was your job? What exactly did you do at the Wardner plant?
Well, I went to work out there just a common labor, picking shovels and pushing wheelbarrows and things like that. Finally, they learned that I had done some cement finishing in years past, you know, time to time. Wasn't an expert at all, but I had done some work, so they put me in the finishing crew. And I followed that for quite a good many years, you know, pouring foundations and doing fine finishing too, like finishing up the plants, you know, all their motor blocks and their floors, stuff like that was what we call fine finishing. Had to be plastered, you know, and pretty red colors or greens or black or what have you. And I tried to get out of the cement work different times with the company. I was working for Stern Rogers Manufacturing Company at the time. But they always managed to get me back in the finished concrete work. I run the mixer for long time, you know. We mixed our own, hold the aggregates up there and mix them right there on the job. And so I've more or less been in the foundation work and finishing ever since. That was in 39 when we moved here. Got my children down here that fall in time to get them in school. People are fussing about this busing business nowadays. My children rode the school bus to school all these years. Thought nothing of it. Yeah. They all finished up, all except their oldest daughter, finished high school right here in Bishop. Our youngest one was born right out here west of Bishop, and he lives in Corpus now. So he doesn't know anything but South Texas.
Can you tell us a little bit about the problems that maybe the buses run during bad weather and that type of thing? Do they have any problems ever getting to school?
Well, the only problems that I know of back there was bad weather, you know, getting roads through. Mostly graded up where the buses had to run, bus routes, you know, graded. And if it's too bad, sometimes they couldn't get there. But otherwise, I don't know of any problems. Of course, I lived out of town, you know. And I didn't know too much about what was going on here. As far as school buses, things, they had a good school here, and always have had since I've been in this country. They've had, as far as I know, top school, you know, for a small town. Yeah, you know Mrs. Wakeland, English teacher here.
How long was she a teacher here?
She was teaching here when we came here.
Can you describe the plant, the gas recycling plant, a little bit far? Whatever you know about it?
Well, I've never heard of such a thing as a recycling plant until I heard of this one. Came here, what they did, you know, this, of course, that field out there was gas. I mean, it was good enough gas to burn it in your car right out of this separator, you know. Well, it was high pressure stuff. I know some of those wells out there that had as much as 3,000 to 3,200 pounds pressure coming out of the ground, so that it had no problem about pumping it out, you see. It just had to hold it down, take it into the plant as it could handle it, and then when it got what they wanted to use out of that gas, they made gasoline, kerosene, and diesel fuel, stuff like that. Well, then they put the pressure back in the ground. So it would keep flowing, you see. They put it in a dry hole, one that wasn't too heavy to produce it. They'd pump the pressure back into that hole and into the strata that it came out of, you see. So that kept the well flowing all these years.
Are these wells still flowing?
Well, no, some of them that fell off, you know, out on the outer edge of the main pond, whatever you call it under there. Well, if they were weeping, you see, well, they'd use them for the recycling and the pressure. Some of them, as far as I know, there's quite a few of them still flowing. Of course, the whole field has weakened some over all these years, you see. They used to say 15 years is about the life of all of our gas field. But this one's been going a good many years more than that. I haven't been out in that part for some time to know just what was going on out there, but I know that the plants were still running, you know. At that time, they called it the Wardner lease. They called it Corpus Christi Corporation. And they changed the name different times, you know. The same company built three big plants out there, one up closer to Ducey, and then one kind of in between, Gulf Plains. They called it the Wardner plant, Gulf Plains, Coastal.
Are all three of these still in operation?
So far as I know, they are. The main one, though, is now, the main big operation is at the Gulf Plains, the one between, you see. They have changed some of their operation from each field, the other fields, to that.
How many people did it take originally to build the Wardner plant? How many people working on construction?
Well, we built them, those, in a big hurry. We had a man out there, the head of construction. He was originally an engineer for Stern Rogers Company. And they, about a year from start to completion, you know, everything in operation, wells all tied in and everything.
It was completed in 39 or 40 years.
40, I guess. No. Let's see. We built Coastal. I was working on it when I got you over down here, wasn't I? Oh, they have.
They changed
about 39, I guess, latter part of 39. Of course, they've added to them all along since, you know, built them bigger and different operations in there, different things, you know. They make airplane fuel too. They put in those units, you know, add to them, things like that.
Was that an important thing during the Second World War then, was producing airplane fuel out there?
Yes, we was working on the third. We were working on the what they call the Gulf Plains plant when that war started. I remember we was all sitting out in the cars eating lunch, listening to news on the radio, no news. When the news came over, you know, the war had broke out. And was it? Yeah, when the Japs bombed Pearl Harbor. Yeah, that was the first news we had of that. We didn't have newspapers wasn't as accessible out here then as they are now, you know. And so most of it came by word of mouth or radio. Of course, there was no TV then.
What was some of the reaction to hearing about Pearl Harbor, the attack of the Japanese on American boats? You remember people's reaction?
Well, we were kind of stunned out there on the job, you know. We knew it was a bad thing and it was going to be rough. It was already rough. And they went in there and bombed out that harbor like they did. It looked like the United States was whipped, you know, right there. So it's a pretty grim thought to think about.
Did very many people that men that you knew sign up for the army and branches?
Yes, there was quite a few from this part, and some of the young men that were working at these plants even signed up. You know, of course, it was defense work. Government was backing it, you see, after things began to look too bad over there.
Then they could stay with a job like that rather than go into the service if it was defense work.
Some of them probably could have, but I didn't know of any that did. If their name come up, you know, they just went on. I got a job out there at one of the plants, just working as a helper, you know. Some of the boys that I knew was overseas, went. So they hired men. But these boys that volunteered and went on, it was understood that they'd get their job back out here, you know, when it was over with. They came back. We all knew that. I knew that, you see, when I hired in. Those boys were ahead of me on the job. In a case like that, it wasn't so much seniority, it was just the thing to do. Mm-hmm. And of course I went from that job to selling these. Working it was also a defense job.
This was during the war, too. Pardon? This was during the war, too.
Yes. Well, it wasn't. It wasn't over yet, you know. It was. They were preparing for bigger things if they needed them.
What type of work did you do out there?
Went back to my same old concrete work, foundation, finishing.
Do you remember what year they started building, selling in?
No, I don't guess I could.
Was it 1945? It must have been before that. I think it was completed by 1945 in operation.
Before that.
Mm-hmm.
It was before 45 permission.
It would have been if it was during the war.
Yeah, they had started it before I came down there, they were still hiring all the men they could get. I know I've been working out there as a helper, you see. And of course they were paying better wages in construction than I was drawing out there. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get a release off that job because it was a defense job. I asked my superintendent out there, no, he couldn't do it. You see, they had one superintendent over all the plants. Well, I had to go to him, and he wouldn't give me the news. See, he knew me, I'd work down there also. He said they made it, they couldn't. He heard it to me, said, you go down there and work maybe a year, the job will be finished and then you'll be out of work. And he says, this job is here to stay. I argued back to him. I said, well, I can go down there and go to work and make as much money in a month as I'm making out here in 2 months. And I said, then, no, a year. Make as much money down there in a year as I can out here in 2 years, and then I'll still have a year left hunting another job. But I had to go to the labor board there. And he wanted excuses, you know, why? And, you know, gas was rationed then. I didn't do like lots of people. I lived out there in the country. I had to come to town to buy groceries, you know, and I had to drive to the job about 12, 13 miles from the job. And I felt like I just wasn't getting enough gas, you know, to do all that. And I told the man over at the labor board, I said, out there I'm 15 miles from the job. If I transfer down here, I'll be 4 miles from the job, which will save gasoline, and then I come the time to get my groceries and carry them home as I come off the job. And I said, besides that, I'll be making twice as much money out there if I don't get any overtime. I'm pretty sure I'll get some overtime down there. He said, well, those are pretty legitimate reasons. So he gave me a release. Well, I never had been down here and talked to them about a job. So I did come down there and talk to him before I got released. Anyhow, the man that was hiring for construction and also hiring for selling these prospective people, you know, come down and talk to him, and he said, you don't know my experiences. I said, well, I've worked these plants out here and I've helped overhaul all those big truck motors, every one of them on both jobs. Tear them down, clean them up, and put them back in operation. He said, man, that's a defense job out there. He says, I'm not even supposed to be talking to you about the job. He said, you suppose you can get a release? I said, well, I don't know. I want to know, be sure that I had a job before I went for a release. He said, well, if you can get a release, you come back down here. He said, we can give you a good job, the experience you had. So I got my release and I come back.
Was this typical of most defense jobs, and you had to get a release to change a job during the Second World War if you were in a defense?
Yeah, well, you see, they passed rules during the war that you couldn't change jobs that way. If you're on a defense job, you were frozen, in other words, on the job. But I got my release and I got my job, and I didn't just stay down there a year. I was down there about 5.5 years.
Was that construction?
Yeah.
Of the plant?
And they offered me a good job in the plants, you know. But they wanted to put me in the compressor house. Boom, 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 boom. Little big motors, you know, going all day long. Well, I had worked in operator shepherd out there in the compressor house, and that thing, I was so irritable when I come home at night, you know, the children make a little noise. I nearly jump out of my chair and grabby, and I told them I didn't want no job in the compressor house. Somebody had to, I know, but then I didn't think my mother would take it.
Then Celanese wasn't a defense plant. Celanese was not a defense plant then. It didn't produce products for the war.
I beg your pardon.
Celanese was not a defense job then. It didn't produce, wasn't to produce products to be used in the war effort.
Well, they wasn't at the time. They were just getting it in. Yeah, they expected to use a lot of their products, you see.
But it wasn't classified as defense, the construction of it then, was it?
Yeah. Well, no, I don't know if the construction was or not, but then Celanese itself was to be, you see. It was classified as a defense job.
What are some of the products, do you know, that they first started making out there?
Well,
know anything about that?
That's the first thing I knew, learned firsthand about is that formaldehyde, stuff like that, floating before we got all the leak stuff.
They had a lot of leaks then in the beginning.
Yeah. They always do, you know, when you first start a plant, there's bugs there. It's got to be thrashed out, you know, got rid of. Yes, they had some leaks, you know. And too, there's a lot of that stuff that the people that was operating it didn't know all about. They had to learn, you know, and be careful.
They bought this stuff from these other plants after they got through with it, and then they made all these other things.
They made plastics, you know, and different kind of. Well, they made the. They got to make it there. Powdered formaldehyde, just looks like snow, you know, flakes. Yes, they bought their products from these other plants after they got everything out of what they wanted, you know, and then they started to hem on their plastic. I don't know, just, well, you see, Celanese has invented, what do you call it? Perfected. Come up with formulas, you know, patented. Any number of formulas for the government that they have produced down here, and I guess in all their other plants now. See, Celanese built a little, what they call a pilot plant over Clarkwood, North Clarkwood. So that's where they did most of their experimenting with these chemicals, you know, and then whenever they perfected it there, well, they built a unit down here to manufacture.
So then it was always expanding all along.
Yeah, I've been still on as far as that's concerned.
What about the size comparison when it was first built and now? Was that a difference in the size?
Well, when we went into production, well, there wasn't much comparison to what it is now. I helped build and finish a what they call a pump house down there. It's just an overhead cement slab, and you have cooling system up there, you see, and the pumps underneath. That building was 800 foot long. And then they started on another one. They had one down south of the tracks. I believe it was 300 something foot long, the last work that I did down there. But I imagine it's built it on out. Because I know those vessels go way on down toward the creek now, you know. Some of those vessels, 100 foot high. Some of them weigh not much as 90 tons. Now they've got, I poured a lot of foundation under those things.
You said something about the crops and farming around the area when you first came down here. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, this was all, most all dirt roads, you see. We lived out west of town here, and they had, it was just starting this system of what's called farm-to-market roads. And it came right in front of our house out there, the first hard surface road that I didn't know anything about this part of the country, you know.
Do you remember the
number of it? It was mud. Black mud, I mean, it was rainy and bad weather, getting home and getting a job sometimes was impossible. But the farming.
Well,
that's,
well, part of it now,
it's
under 70.
Yeah, there's 70 highway now around that way. But the farming was done with mules.
This was back in 39.
39, 40, along there. There was a few farmers beginning to, oh, shortly after that, getting tractors, you know. But I know there were several farmers around here that that had all 10 or 15 tenant farmers on their place, you see, renting land from them. Of course, that was all done. A lot of single team farming, and some of the larger farmers I've seen holding up too many years after I came here. Some of these big farmers, the government got to paying them subsidies for layoff of some of this farming, some of the crops that they had surplus. Well, the landlords took that, you see, and bought tractors, maybe used one hand to farm all the land that maybe 6 or 8 or 10 men had been farming, and drawing that subsidy itself. Which is very noticeable to me, because I used to farm, you know, I grew up on the farm. I've seen mule teams. I remember one time I was coming from Corpus across the country up there, one big farm out between there and Banquette on that road. Through there had, I believe it was 15 cultivators. I counted passing along in one big cotton field. Four mule team, you know, each one of those cultivators. And he had his feedlot alongside the road there, you know, great big long barns for them mules standing under one of the sheds, you might call it. Took up half the farm. Of course, I can see where when they got rid of those mules and up tractors, you know, they could do away with all that and just use that for farmland. Farming has changed quite, unbelievably a lot since that time. And they had Then it was mostly cotton and what they called maize and an awful lot of vegetables. They raised vegetables. Hundreds of them. See 100 acres of cabbage in the wood. Carrots or spinach. Stuff like that. Well, I guess these people that used to farm this land had together. It was a sight to me because I was raised up there where it was all small farms, you know, rolling country. It was big, 100 acres of cabbage, 100 acres of onions. It wasn't anything to see 100 acre onion field.
You said something about rotating the crop.
Well, they didn't rotate them much back there, as far as I could tell. Now they plant vegetables in the fall or winter, like whatever time of year they plant them, you know, and they'd come off in the spring, and then they'd put that land into maize. Feed crop, some of that kind. That is what two of them. Yeah, late spring, they're cotton and corn. Cotton and corn. What? There never has been too much corn. I never saw any very large corn fields in this part of the country. They did raise some corn. Cotton and vegetables were the main crop.
When did you know the vegetables beginning to fade from the farming scene?
Well, I don't remember just what year. It wasn't too long because farmers started buying these big tractors, you see.
About the same time as the tractor.
Yeah, when they started that. Why, they quit fooling with that little stuff, you know, and planted all cotton and feed stuff, mostly. The maize changed to a different breed. I don't know just what to call it now, but then it was improved, you know, to where it would stand up. That's one thing about the corn. The plant corn, you know, it'd come one of those soaking rains and high winds would blow it down. Run in the field. Well, this other stuff doesn't blow down so bad, you see. Of course, cotton can get too much rain and hit the wrong stage, damage it pretty bad. Yeah, when we came here, this was counted the cotton center of the world. They had 5 gins here in town, and they had one out just west of town here. We lived in one of the gin houses the first year we were here, so they'd need them that next fall, or summer, when they went picking cotton. And they had one you could just see them all over the country, you know, right out in the middle of cotton fields. But talking about rotating, I think that's one big mistake they made, my opinion, you know, just from observation and little experience back years ago. You just plant the same crop on the land every year and put nothing back, or you're going to weaken your productivity of your soil. And that's what it did with the cotton. You see, cotton takes everything out and puts nothing back in the land. Whereas this maize, stuff like that, you see, they do get some substance back, the stalks, you know, chopped up and plowed under. But
So then the crops, the yield of cotton, aren't near what they were when you first arrived here.
No, I didn't pay much attention to that part of it then. It was no problem at all to make a bale an acre, which used to be pretty good cotton, you know. But hey, some farms since it went to fertilizer, has made quite a bit more than that. But this grain, you see, I haven't paid much attention to that for several years. But it wasn't no trouble to get the $300 or $400 worth of grain to the acre off of it. And it's higher than that now.
It's high now. We talked a little bit about flood and snowfall, the weather in general. You want to tell us about that?
Well, that came with snow, hard freeze, first winter we were down here. We had snow on the ground 3 or 4 days, you know, patches still laying around. I came to Bishop. Day or two after the snow fell, I went home and told my family about it, you know, see, old men. Older than I wasn't too old then, but I've been past playing in the snow for a good many years. Up on top of those buildings down there, you know, and somebody gets up, start in, everybody just starts pelting with snowballs. They get it up on top of them. Now, we used to play like that when we were kids, you know, North Texas and Oklahoma. But it looks fun to see grown people snow fighting. But it froze, machinery, busted blocks, you know, and welding machines out on the construction job, water pipes. I'm telling you, it played havoc with these people. You wouldn't use anything like that. This
way. About how deep was the snowfall? About how many inches?
Oh, it wasn't too deep. 3 or 4 or 5 inches on the ground, you know. It happened to sort of pile up. Ordinarily it would melt it, you know, fast as it fell, but that came in with the freezing. And of course it froze on top of the ground a little. It was a beautiful snowfall, but I didn't like it. I told him I'd come to South Texas to get out of that kind of foolishness. And the snow the first winter out here.
Any other weather conditions that you particularly remember outside of snow?
Well, we've had several of those little storms come through here since we moved here, you know. Not too severe, but make people run for high ground and cover. Florida, Fern has been, and Celia, been the worst things we've witnessed. Flooding mostly. That's what hurt us worse, anyhow. We didn't blow away anything. But Well, they had it over in this part. It was bad all over.
I wonder if they even remembered anything that let alone you remember whatever you might have heard about her.
Well, I don't know. I've heard people say that she took tonsillitis on them, rubbed the tonsils out.
She'd actually get the tonsil out.
I never did meet the woman myself. I've heard a lot about her. I know a lot of people that went through her, you know, and swore that she cured them of the ailments, whatever. Now, my oldest daughter, I think she took
She had written for her, didn't she? She had a book about it on her daughter. And she decided she'd go there to see her, and she gave her a few pictures. I don't know if that she rubbed that daughter away or what. I couldn't say, you know, either way. But I know there's a lot of people that still believe there. I mean, she moved to Corpus out here. Yeah.
Do you have any idea of what the future holds for Bishop? What do you think it's going to be like in Bishop in the future years?
Well, no, the town has been growing, the population, you know, homes and stuff like that. Of course, everything was done on Main Street then. They had several grocery stores, couple of hardware stores and things like that. A lot of the businesses has closed up. But the highways are called a lot of that, you know, supermarket. We've got a mighty fine supermarket here. And some smaller grocery stores, you know, on the, what's called drive-in groceries here. I hate to see all those stores locked up down there, but that's, they say it's progress. But I think, I don't know what'll change it, if anything, but, you know, with the good roads, automobiles, everything, it's just a few minutes from here to good supermarkets where you want to go, or other business houses. Now, we used to have a couple of lumber yards here. As I said, we used to have five gins, or the gins. I really don't know if they have a gin here in town now or not. Now, you see, I've lived up at Driscoll several years. Haven't gotten around much. And I haven't, that's been out of my interest, you know, the farming business. I had a paralytic stroke about 15 years ago. Kind of put me out of commission. I don't get around and see what's going on. I used to. But the people that live here seems to be, you know, homes. They're building homes. Mm-hmm. Well, it's people don't want to live in a big town, just like we are. Kids want to go to Corpus. I don't know. Corpus is a big town for me. Good people, good churches, good doctors here, and all that, so, and good groceries right here handy to me. So I...
It's kind of a perfect place for you, then.
Yeah, it's just the nicest place I could find for us, you know. We've gotten older and ailing and can't do things. I'm not interested in getting around like we used to be, you know. And as long as we've got a place to live, roof over our head, good neighbors, folks like that. What more can a fellow wish for?